up your frozen dinners, grab your TV tray, and settle in for another episode of the Plus Platoon, your podcast for all things Disney Plus, brought to you by Disney Plus fans. Watch along with us every week as we cover all the new, the old, the good, and the bad on Disney Plus. So put down that remote, don't touch that dial, and welcome your fabulous Plus Platoon host.
Hey everyone, welcome to Plus Platoon. We're a Disney Plus fan podcast that gives honest, spoiler-filled reviews of movies and shows on Disney Plus. We'll look at new releases, coming attractions, and we'll even go back into the vault to revisit some of the classic Disney that's on the platform. Make sure you're subscribed and you will never miss a moment. I'm going to bring in Kate. Kate, good to see you this evening.
Ah, it's good to see you once upon a dream, my friend.
Once upon a dream, I think Casey might have an issue with. Next, we have Pete. Pete, how are you doing tonight?
Touch the podcast. Touch it, I say.
Steve, help. Help, Steve. The first time in 16 years, I'm going to be screaming if I'm not careful. Guys, if you have not already, please like, subscribe, share. We've got some fun shows coming up. And we also need your help. So just keep that in mind as we go forward. But for this week, if you couldn't tell, we are doing Sleeping Beauty. It's the 1959 animated Sleeping Beauty. Work on this was started in 1951. The dialogue was recorded, I believe it was in 1953. So from 53 until 59, they were simply working on the animation. Disney, I mean, this is the movie that the castle in Disneyland is named after 4 years before it was actually going to come out. So Disney was thinking that far in advance on his marketing for this. Features a what I would call a fairly Disney all-star cast. Maleficent is the also you hear her as Lady Tremaine. She's also comes back as Madame Leota in the Haunted Mansion. We have heard Flora before as the fairy godmother. Meriwether was Lady in Lady and the Tramp. You hear, I think it's either, I think King Stefan comes back later as at least one of the other old pompous fat men. So it's one where if you're watching it, you will recognize some of the voices. You'll recognize what I will say is the song, basically, because there's a couple songs, but Once Upon a Dream is the main song from this. And it has, you know, you've got Flora, Fauna, Meriwether, you've got Maleficent, who, oh my gosh, is probably the queen. Oh, I have always said is the best Disney villain.
She's perfection.
Between the she has the sarcasm of Scar and Hades, with the only thing she has any sympathy for is her raven. But even that, it's one of those. Okay, so she has, you know, she has the raven, but she basically has no redeeming qualities. So,
such a good way to put it.
Am I wrong?
No.
So, okay. So, as we have asked before, is this a princess movie? Is Sleeping Beauty a princess? Now, yes, I know she is, you know, it's called Sleeping Beauty. But other than that, is this a princess movie? Kate.
Is this where I'm allowed to say who I think the main character is?
Yes.
So if we're going judged based on who the main character is, absolutely not. Because Flora, Fauna, and Meriwether.
Yes.
This movie could have been called The Three Good Fairies. Like, and by the way, when I was watching this movie, at first I thought that the narrator said the three hood fairies, And I was like, that's a very different movie. And a movie that I would pay a lot of money to watch because I think it'd be very funny. But yeah, this movie could have been, they were the stars of this movie. Not only were they hilarious and quirky, but no, Aurora, who is supposedly the main character, who Sleeping Beauty is the namesake of, she's barely in it.
She has, I believe it's 18 lines, not counting the song.
She's barely in it. But this is where it's hard for me to answer this, is because I worked at Disney for so long and she was so canon in the Disney princess, like the main, like a lot of times if you look, the main trio is Cinderella, Snow White, Aurora, and then comes Belle, Ariel, Jasmine, and the like. But so that's a hard one for me to answer. Pete, what do you think?
It's a princess movie. I mean, yes, you are 100% correct. She is not much of a character in the story, but the entire story is about her and around her existence. And all the motivation of all the characters are, literally all of the characters are motivated because of her. So I still think it's a princess movie. Steve?
It's not a princess movie. It's a fairy movie. It's more about the fairies, because you look at your typical princess movies, I look at like Little Mermaid and stuff, is she's off doing something. Here she's just living happily her life, and then she touches the needle. You never tell someone not to touch something because they're going to touch it. It's not a princess movie, it's a fairy movie.
I would argue that it is a princess movie, but it is the best princess movie possible for young boys, because the prince actually does something. This was my favorite Disney movie growing up. Now, you gotta remember, I grew up before, this was before the Renaissance. This was before Little Mermaid, that crew. This was my favorite Disney movie. I can specifically remember my brother and I climbing up. We had, you know, this little shields and swords you get from like a Renaissance festival. And we would climb up on like the sofa fighting Maleficent along with Prince. I mean, we had the hat, we had everything. This is a great movie for the prince, because, well, it says something that the prince actually has a name, because he actually does something.
Yeah.
In Cinderella and in Snow White, the prince in the movies anyway never officially has a name. It's just the prince or Prince Charming. And Pete brought up an interesting point, though, and they did this on purpose to focus it down to one story. You don't have the Cinderella mice. You don't have all these other mini subplots. They tried to keep this as crisp and clean as possible, as only one plot story, which I think it was successful with. I think it's, as Pete said, the whole thing, there aren't subplots. There are not subplots. It all revolves around Philip and Aurora.
And the fairies.
Well, yes. But even they are doing what they do because of Philip and Aurora.
Well, except, they constantly make bad decisions, though.
Oh.
Because yeah. Like Miss Maleficent shows up at the beginning and she's like, oh, you forgot my invitation. And one of the fairies goes, you weren't invited. Yeah. So, or yeah, you're not wanted here. She hadn't said that, whole thing could have been avoided.
No, I don't think so.
Just saying it. I think they could have avoided the whole thing. Then 16 years, they take their child away. And the last day, they got to go and have a magic fight on the color of the dress. Alerting Maleficent to where she is so that she pricks the spindle.
That was so good, though.
And the fight over the color of the dress was put in there because the animators could not decide if they wanted a pink dress or a blue dress. So that's part of the reason they put it in there, is because they kept arguing pink or blue, which it's interesting. What color does the dress end up as? And Kate's not allowed to answer this one first. What color does the dress end up as?
Blue.
Blue. Blue.
The dress is pink.
What?
the dress, the last before the book shuts, the dress is pink. And that's why in at Disney, base character, she always has a pink dress.
Well, that's because they couldn't give her blue because Cinderella has blue.
Right. But when the book closes, yes, the dress is blue most of the time. Yes. But it follows that, you know, yeah, right before the book closes, the dress is pink.
Yeah. I mean, so, I've never had an issue with it, but yeah, whatever.
So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just one of those fun little trivia pieces. So
it's a good point. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this was, I would say, the last of the truly classic traditional Disney animated movies. You still got 101 Dalmatians in those, but all of a sudden with those, you start getting to some of the more, honestly, Xeroxing comes into a lot more play. There's a lot more rotoscoping going on in some of those older ones. But this only realistically has a couple of songs. You've got the I Wonder / Once Upon a Dream, which on the soundtrack, they count those as all one song. You've got the Skomps, the King Hubert and King Philip song about, you know, basically, let's drink to everybody. And then you've got a couple little choir songs. Did you want another song in this? There were a couple songs that were cut, but did you want this for a Disney princess movie or for a Disney movie from the 50s? Because you've got to remember, we're going off of Cinderella. We're going off of Peter Pan. We're going off of Lady and the Tramp. Did you want another song as you were watching it, Steve?
Nope. I think the amount of songs was fine. I think it worked. No, I don't think I need another song. I didn't even think about this until you brought it up, thinking back and going, maybe that's why I liked it so much. Of I felt like it didn't get weighted down by unnecessary songs.
And I would agree. I would not have minded an up-tempo song of some sort. The bippity-boppity-boo, the You Can Fly type, like, up-tempo there.
Yeah.
But other than that, no. Especially because they stuck to all of the musical themes and everything they did, especially, you know, even Once Upon a Dream, is all from somewhere in Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty ballet. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, 98% of the music is taken its cues at least from the Tchaikovsky. I mean, the Once Upon a Dream is the main theme of the Tchaikovsky ballet. So I would not have minded another, some kind of an up-tempo song, the Under the Sea, the You Can Fly, that early up-tempo song, something where, like, if the good fairies had sung something as they were deciding to use their magic. Something there might have worked.
Was the Skomps song the villain song?
No, there was no villain song.
That was okay. I saw Skomps on the thing, and I was like, "Did I miss it?" Skomps
is the two dads.
Copy that. If you were going to add a song, which I agree with Steve, doesn't need it. Give Maleficent just a great song.
I don't disagree with that, but up until Little Mermaid, villains didn't get songs.
Well, no wonder she was so mad. That makes perfect sense. First, she wasn't invited to the party.
I do not have a song.
She doesn't get her own song. Or even, and I have also not seen the Maleficent. Which is fine. But I have listened to parts of the soundtrack from it, and Maleficent's super slow, almost minor key of Once Upon a Dream is really powerful and really, oh, hush. It's my turn.
It completely.
And I think that if you did Once Upon a Dream in a minor key to like have her dream be that she never wakes up in all this twisted stuff, I think that could have been powerful, but that's also pretty ahead of its time, circa 1950, whatever. Go ahead. Whoever's next, Pete.
I do not want another song in this movie. I actually like that it was a really tight, like, hour and 15 minutes. And I shouldn't even call it really tight because there were some parts to me that got a little boring, but it did not need more. Derek made a good point. I didn't even think about it. It's a very tight plot. It's just about Aurora's story. And I did not need there to be more filler with songs. I was fine with it as it was.
Changing the song to Maleficent's song completely changes the meaning of the song, and the minor key completely ruins it. Anyway, so going on. So one of the big things about this movie was the visual style. This was completely different from anything Disney ever did. And it was very much based upon old medieval artwork. And Walt specifically thought that he loved some of Mary Blair's original. The idea was he loved some of Mary Blair's original ideas for like Peter Pan, Alice in Wonderland, and he thought that it got lost. So he wanted to take a very specific visual style and keep it throughout the entire movie. They have square trees. They have the long, rather severe, I would say, lines almost, but at the same time, they're kind of flowy. Lots of angles. Did the visual style work for you, Kate?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
In the fact that it did not look like any other Disney movie.
To think about. No, it did look like a lot of other Disney movies. Like the animation, I mean, while I was watching this, I was like, wait, have I seen this? Because I've seen an owl that looks like that. Oh, wait, I've seen a squirrel that looks like that. And have I seen these two dads before? And also, I've seen this dance sequence before.
Dance sequence you definitely have.
But even like, and forgive me, I don't remember what year Fantasia came out, but even like the broomsticks walking down the stairs.
1940.
Okay. Even the broomsticks or like the horse reminded me a lot of the horses from Mary Poppins.
I was going to say, did the horse remind you of
Maximus?
Maximus.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me more of the animated horses from Mary Poppins, but yes.
Okay.
So well, yes. I thought it was beautiful. Especially the colors in the make it blue, make it pink. That part I thought was really pretty in how they designed that. But is it unlike any other Disney movie of that time? No. Pete, what do you think?
I disagree with you, Kate. I think that it really had a very unique style. Not so much. I mean, you're right. When thinking of the characters, I would agree that a lot of the characters looked very Disney. I'm more thinking of the background and foreground imagery within the movie felt very, very arty, very colors that pop a lot. As Derek pointed out, you had like square trees and very like the rocks and the forests and everything. Watching it, I made the comment to my daughter who's just graduated animation. I'm like, is this like of the early Disney movies, is this the like best animated one? And she was like, yeah, probably it is. You know, I'd like to at some point talk a little bit about the consequences of this movie, but that
go happened for
after
it.
This. You want me to do it right now?
We'll get there in a little bit.
Go around. But there's no lack of style and skill that was all over the screen in this. The Maleficent castle stuff, the stuff at the end, the battle with, I mean, you know, everybody talks about like Madame Mim and Merlin fighting, but like, oh my God, that doesn't even hold a candle to Philip and Maleficent. It's just beautiful, beautiful animation. So, Steve,
reminds me of a very elaborate pop-up book in terms of some of the style, like that very storybook, like just visually stunning. So I enjoyed it. It worked for me. I felt like. And I disagree with Kate. I don't think it was something that you've seen. It was so different, but very visual. I mean, you still see it, like looking at like the title card of the dragon and then the fire, just how visually stunning it was. Derek, what do you think?
To me, the visual style definitely works, especially, as I said, some of the, like, the Maleficent and the horses. And I love the backgrounds. The only other place you'll see this is in Donald and Meth Magic Land with the square roots. But, so...
Is that intended as a pun?
No, in my Donald and Meth Magic Land, it definitely was intended as a pun. Because he goes, oh, look, square roots. And they're literally... The roots of trees that are square. In this, it's not.
That's funny. That's funny.
It is. That's why Donald gets the best jokes. But in this, it was meant as a artistic decision. I think it's hard for me to not say yes that it works because I have watched this movie so many times and enjoy this movie. And it's, I could not see Maleficent looking any other way than how she looks. I think that it is not, if you compare the artistry and how characters look in this versus how characters look in Peter Pan, two totally different animation styles.
That one I will agree with.
Or even Cinderella, two totally different animation styles. Part of the reason that Archimedes and the squirrels look the same and the Mad Madam Mim translation into the dragon looks the same is because they rotoscoped out of the Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Can I ask a question real quick?
Okay. Rotoscoping is when they take stuff.
And no. How was Walt Disney, if they pulled a lot of the music from
Tchaikovsky?
Yeah, from the ballet, then did they just put their own words to it? How is that legal?
Yes. Because A, it was so... There's a reason they use Tchaikovsky and Fantasia. It's out of copyright.
Oh.
And so you can... I could take it and put my words... And put words to Tchaikovsky or anything like that.
I mean, they credited it at the beginning. If you look at the beginning, it says...
Based on music based on Tchaikovsky's play... Sorry, ballet is Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
My guess is also laws were much different then.
No, they really weren't actually.
Oh,
no,
really?
If something's old enough, it goes out of copyright. No, we're at this point.
Isn't that
we're
what
having...
just happened with Steamboat Willie?
Yes.
Yes. And the original animations of Winnie the Pooh, not the Disney animations of Winnie the Pooh. But part of the reason for, and you mentioned Disney's, where was Disney, like Walt in all of this? Walt was very involved in the foundation of the story. Walt was very involved in the story meetings in 1951 and 1952. Then he started with Disneyland and didn't really, and he helped pick out the style, but that was done in like 52, 53. But after that, Walt didn't really touch it because he was interested in Disneyland.
That makes sense.
So he didn't really have that much to do with. There's a reason this is the last big animated movie. There's a reason that they went to a lot of more live action movies that were based off of books that had a little bit more developed plots, because Walt didn't have to be involved because he was involved in Disneyland. So,
yeah, I mean, so Disney did have the number two grossing movie in 1959, but it was not this movie. It was The Shaggy Dog. And this movie bombed at the box office. Yeah. And as Derek pointed out, they spent a lot of time and they spent a lot of money on this movie, something like $6.5 million.
$6.5 was the most expensive animated movie until, I believe, Black Cauldron.
Yeah, that makes sense because Black Cauldron went way over budget.
Yeah.
And... This was pretty...
It lost basically $1 million.
It lost $1 million. It pretty much killed the artistry of Disney animation from this point. Not to say that they're bad movies, but from this point forward, you went to 101 Dalmatians and Aristocats. Very simplistic, thick lines.
Photocopied.
Using a lot of Xerox for the animation, everything like that. Very low budget, very low quality animation. And, you know, leading up to this, we had, as you said, Peter Pan, you had Alice in Wonderland. I wouldn't call them as visually beautiful as this movie, but you still had a lot of artistry to those movies. And no denying, I shouldn't diss it. There's artistry to, you know, 101 Dalmatians and Cruella and all the characters and everything. But just like this movie changed how Disney did animation, not for the better. So,
and after this, Disney went from like 450 animators to like 75.
Yeah.
So you think that, I just wanted to understand, you think that 101 Dalmatians, Aristocats, all of that is not as good of animation, or is it just different?
The animation itself is not as good.
I would argue from an artistic standpoint, it's not as good. Yeah. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
Sure.
It's just a more simplistic form of animation that's done to get it done quicker and cheaper.
More cost effective. Right.
Yeah. And as I said, it works. There's nothing wrong with it. It doesn't make the Aristocats a bad movie.
Right.
But if you pay attention to the animation, you can see the step down from those ones leading up to this movie, and then like, whoop, you know, there's definitely a step down, and that doesn't step back up till I would probably argue Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Because even Little Mermaid is...
There's some roughness there.
Has some rough
but stuff. So many of the movies, other than maybe 101 Dalmatians, are animal-based.
The Wait rescuers. A minute. Whoa, 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 whoa. Stop, 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 stop. 101 Dalmatians is not animal-based?
No, but you have Cruella, and you have like three main characters that are humans, whereas in The Rescuers Down Under, pretty much entirely animals.
Okay, no, we're going to ignore it because that's later. How about the original Rescuers, though?
There's a couple, but...
Penny and Madame Medusa and her sidekick?
Sure. Okay, you found the one exception.
No, because you got 101 Dalmatians, then you got Sword in the Stone, which is mostly humans.
Okay, I'm wrong.
And then you got...
Robin Hood is about the only one that's not.
Yeah.
Well, and the Aristocats. The butler
is the main. She is right that it becomes more animal.
It does.
It's more animal focused. They're still adults. But I have another comment.
Go ahead.
Why did they make her 16? We're going back to Aurora.
Because that's the age she was in the original fairy tale. You got to understand, she was 16. Ariel is 16. Even in 1989, Ariel was 16. You've got Snow White is, I think it's 14. You got to remember, Juliet is 13. In Romeo and Juliet, Juliet's 13.
God help us.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, that's how things used to be, right? I mean, yeah.
You had to be married by 16 so you can have kids.
Right.
But also remember, this was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Because it starts off of, here's Noah. Oh,
yeah, that's right.
He's like 20 or 22.
Plus, right? Also, everybody died at 35, so you had to compress.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the 13th century.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So, anything else, guys? Anything else you want to talk about for the movie?
Okay. I wish that I had watched this sooner.
I like this movie, but there's some slow parts to it.
I would agree. I would agree that there's some parts that could have been, instead of an hour 15, it could have been an hour 8. Hour 9.
And I wonder if what hurt it the most is that there's very little humor to it. A little bit with the fairies.
The fairies is it.
It's a very straight story with not a lot of humor. I think the prince, the action with the prince could appeal to boys, but is a movie called Sleeping Beauty going to get your boy to the... Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing that happened with Princess and the Frog. Is there's stuff in Princess and the Frog that boys would like, but you it's named the same your...
thing that happened with Princess Bride.
Well, yeah.
I mean...
God, that's such a good movie.
Well, but it got killed and it was dead in the box office because they didn't know how to market it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I will say Maleficent has some excellent one-liners. And of course, I can't remember them all right
her
now.
Her one-liners are amazing.
She's got her and the fairies, I would say, are the funnier parts of this.
And there should have been more Maleficent.
And Maleficent's is much more of a dry humor.
Yes. It's not slapstick comedy.
Maleficent is every teacher ever has been looking in cradles for the last 16 years. Are you kidding me?
Brilliant writing.
This was your assignment and you did that?
She had another one that was like, ugh, what a letdown of evil genius, or what a God! I can't remember what the line was.
Like what a disappointment to the forces of evil.
Yes, that was it. That was it. God, that was so good.
Well, and out of the first time in 16 years, I shall sleep well.
Yes.
That's you've been working at a job and suppose it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Okay. As we always do, we rate things out of cups of pie, 5 pixie dust, cups of pixie dust, 4 Sleeping Beauty. Kate, how many cups of pixie dust for Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah, I'm going to give this a solid 3.5. I'm not going to give it a 4 because I'm not sure that like if it was on, I would stop everything and watch it. But I would watch it again if somebody was like, I haven't seen Sleeping Beauty in a long time. All right. Whereas like, Snow White, I probably wouldn't do that. Cinderella, probably not. But this one, because Maleficent is so good and the fairies are so good, and I do like parts of the animation, I'm going to give it a 3.5. Pete?
I think I'm giving it a 3.5. Again, there's parts of this that are slow. There's parts of this that are iconic. Beautifully animated, and definitely worth watching. Definitely one I will come back to. I can't quite give it a 4 just because of the slow part. That it's a 75-minute movie and there's still parts that I'm bored during keeps it from getting a 4. So, Steve?
I'm with you. 3.5, 3.5. Like, just not quite a 4. Maybe if there was more Maleficent in it, because I think those are the parts that I really enjoyed. So, Derek?
I'm torn because to me, the last 15 minutes is a 5. From when she goes and visits him in the dungeon until the end.
Yes.
Is right. A 5.
It's 100%, but it's a 75-minute movie.
The rest of it's like a 2.5 or a 3 for the most part. So, I think we're honestly going to go straight 3.5s on this one.
Wow, that doesn't happen very often.
I'm looking at a couple of things I've given a 4 to.
I don't know if Derek's old enough to have watched Wonderful World of Disney, but I know that Steve is. And like that last 15 minutes was on there all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Because we used to have actually a Wonderful World of Disney clip show, which come on at 5 o'clock on our PBS stations when I was growing up. So it was like a 40 minute of that. Then you had the Keep Looking Up Guy Planetarium dude from Miami. And then had like the McNeil Lair Report or something like that. But yeah,
my favorite.
But every Halloween, all the Halloween stuff, Disney throws this in there. Yeah. But as I said, the last 15 minutes, especially for a boy growing up and wanting to watch Disney movies of the time, was
great.
There's a reason growing up that I always thought of this as my favorite Disney movie.
It is something how well the pace of the movie picks up in those last 15-20 minutes for a movie that for the first 45 to 50 minutes is very slow moving.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, and Disney has on here, it's a documentary about the making of, and it's included in the extras. And they said, the big problem is Sleeping Beauty is a 5-paragraph story.
Right.
So, I mean, there's not a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot of this going on in this movie. And then, but in the last 15 minutes, they stop that. And
even from when she pricks the finger until the end, that has like an extra 5 minutes of them putting them to sleep, which is always the part where almost loses me. But yeah. So, okay. no Disney Plus news this week. So we actually taped this a little bit in advance because I will be at Disney World and we'll all be on different places as far as vacations. But next week, Pete will shine because we are watching the documentary Jaws at 50. This is 50 years of Jaws.
I didn't wear
no, we are not watching
I'll Jaws. Wear my t-shirt.
But
I could probably recite Jaws, so I don't need to see it.
Well, except this is a documentary on the making of Jaws.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I don't need to watch Jaws.
That's fair. I mean, I could do that with several movies also. So, so that's Jaws at 50 is next week. But coming up in like a month, there's not much out there. I'm sure we'll have Thunderbolts out there at some point. But other than that, not much has been announced. I know end of the year, there's going to be a Marvel show coming out, Wonder Man or something like that, Wonder Bread. I don't know. And then I'm sure Fantastic Four will make an appearance at some point this fall or winter on Disney Plus. But other than that, not much has been announced. So, and please, please, if you do announce something, bring us back some kind of animation. Bring us back, like, Toot Whistle Plunk and Boom is not on the Disney Plus.
Whew.
Which I think is weird. And some of those like classic stuff, the shorts that won the Academy Awards are not on Disney Plus at the moment. So anyway, if anyone from Disney is listening, please put those on there. But send us suggestions on what you want to watch. Plusfootune@gmail.com, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anything. New episodes every Thursday on YouTube and all the major podcasting services. For Kate, Pete, and Steve, we will see everyone next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for watching this week's episode of the Plus Platoon. Be sure to subscribe to the Plus Platoon podcast to keep getting great content each week. Then head over to Apple Podcasts and leave those 5-star reviews as they help make the Plus Platoon visible to even more Disney Plus fans. Also, go to YouTube and like and subscribe to the Plus Platoon channel, where you can watch all future episodes live. If you have a question for the Plus Platoon, please send us an email to plusplatoon@gmail.com or connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @PlusPlatoon.
The Plus Platoon is a Disney Plus fan podcast and is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or the Disney Plus streaming service. All opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the individual hosts and in no way reflect the views of the Walt Disney Company.
Thanks for watching, and be sure to stay tuned for next week's episode, because the Plus Platoon is to be continued.